Good morning and welcome
to Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to our Blog Talk Radio show with Dr. Sheldon Feldman, the Vivian L. Milstein Associate Professor of Clinical Surgery in the Clinical Cancer Program at Columbia University Medical Center, New York Presbyterian Hospital. I'm Deborah Schwartz, Executive Director of the Office of External Affairs in the Department of Surgery. And today we're going to be continuing with the final episode of a three-part Blog Talk Radio series on what you need to know about breast cancer. Our first program originally covered questions on prevention and family history. During our second program, we discussed the needle or the knife question and the importance of considering a biopsy before having surgery. If you are unable to attend these episodes, be certain to listen to our archived version found on our Columbia Surgery Blog Talk Radio station, which is blogtalkradio.com/Columbia Surgery. Again, blogtalkradio.com/Columbia Surgery. Now, in our third program, we will cover what you need to know if you're diagnosed with advanced stage breast cancer. We will cover questions such as, what are my options for cure and longevity? What are my treatment options? Is prophylactic mastectomy effective and recommended? This program will help our followers prepare for our event titled Bridging the Gap, Enhancing Breast Cancer Prevention, Screening, and Wellness. This program is going to be held on Saturday, November 17th, from 8:30 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon at Club 101 in Manhattan. It's located on Park Avenue and 40th Street. There, we'll be talking with later today, we'll be talking with one of our event planners, Christine Rain, towards the end of our session. But if you'd like more information now, you can visit www.columbiasurgery.org and click on events, or email Christine directly at cm as in Mary, r as in radio, 2146@columbia.edu. Again, Christine's email is cmr2146@columbia.edu. And now I would like to welcome Dr. Feldman to our program. We are so glad to have you today, Dr. Feldman.
Thank you so much, Deborah. It's a pleasure to be here with you and to participate in this program. You know, on behalf of myself and my colleagues, Dr. Brett Tabak and Dr. Nantha Krishnan, our breast surgery division is extremely active, and we value having the opportunities like this to interact with the larger community. Today, we're going to be covering areas which I think largely will give us some good news about the rapid progress we're making in treating advanced breast cancer. I'm going to focus a little bit on some of the responses relating particularly to the importance of multidisciplinary approach to treating complex breast cancer, having a full team, including medical oncology, radiation oncologists, plastic surgeons involved in the process, and about the different subtypes of breast cancer, because we really do know that breast cancer is not one disease. There are different types of breast cancer, which really require very different types of treatments. And lastly, a little bit about the importance of being involved in clinical trials. So I look forward to responding to some questions, Deborah.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Feldman. But before we begin, I'd like to cover a couple of housekeeping issues. Today we're taking live questions. Listeners can call in to 347-539-5189. But if you'd like to ask a question on Twitter, mention at Columbia Surgery. We'll try to answer as many questions as we can within the next 30 minutes. However, if you have submitted a question that we were unable to get to, we will follow up with you through email. So now we're going to start with our first question, and this question comes from Brandon, who asks, my mom, 66, has stage 4 breast cancer. She was in remission, but now the cancer has resurfaced in her bones, although not in the breast. I'm confused. Is she still in remission for breast cancer, or is she back at having stage 4 breast cancer? What should we expect moving forward?
Well, Brandon, I know this. It's a good question. The terminology can be confusing. Since your mom does have evidence of cancer in her bones, she is not in remission. Having stage 4 breast cancer means that the disease has spread beyond the breast to other parts of the body. Now, in terms of metastatic disease, the most common site for breast cancer to spread to are the bones. The other organs that commonly can be involved with breast cancer are liver, lung, and brain. Bone metastases actually have the most favorable prognosis. So patients with bone-only disease have an excellent prognosis and really can be treated very, very effectively with expectation for a long period of good health.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question is from Erin, who asks, I read that the drug tamoxifen can be used in people in advanced stages of breast cancer. Will it still be helpful at all if the cancer is spread to the lymph nodes? And what are the drug's benefits? And also, what are my other options?
Well, this is an important question, Erin. Tamoxifen is one of the old standard medications, actually now has been used for almost 40 years in the treatment of breast cancer. Interestingly, initially, tamoxifen was really only used for treating the most advanced stages of breast cancer, and then it became clear that it was very effective in that situation and has moved to being treated in earlier stage breast cancer and even to prevent breast cancer. So in terms of it being active in patients where the cancer has spread to lymph nodes, it certainly is. The key thing with tamoxifen and other what we call endocrine or hormonal therapies is that it is only effective in patients whose breast cancer is sensitive to estrogen in a woman's body, and that we call estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. So if the target of the estrogen receptor is present in the breast cancer cell, then tamoxifen is very, very effective in blocking the interaction between estrogen in a woman's body and that breast cancer cell. Now, it also is beneficial in reducing the risk of breast cancer in the opposite breast, and it also is beneficial in terms of actually helping the bones. It's good for the bones, just the way estrogen is. The other options besides tamoxifen are a class of medications called the aromatase inhibitors. These are medications which actually block the conversion of testosterone or male hormone to estrogen by the aromatase enzyme. These medications are extremely effective in treating estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, but only for women who are after menopause. So the short answer is that tamoxifen would be very effective if there's lymph node spread, that it is very beneficial. It's been used for many years and extremely safe.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Feldman. We received our next question through Facebook, and it asks, my sister, 55 years old, diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer in April of 2012, had a mastectomy, 3 positive lymph nodes under her arm, 12 weeks of grueling chemotherapy, and 5 weeks of radiation treatment. Now she found out she has lung and bone mets, just when our family thought she'd beat this disease. Are there any promising clinical trials or alternative treatments?
Well, I'm sorry that that your sister is going through and your family is going through this difficult ordeal. Triple negative breast cancer is defined as breast cancers which do not have the estrogen receptor, do not have a different hormone receptor called progesterone receptor, and do not overexpress a particular oncogene called the HER2-NU. So what it means is that there has not yet been identified a specific target that medication that can hit that we know will be very effective in activating the cancer cell. So it sounds like all the treatment that she has had to this point has been completely appropriate, has not been effective in preventing the progression of disease elsewhere. Now, there is a new class of medications which look incredibly promising for patients with triple-negative breast cancer, which are called PARP inhibitors. And the way these work, cancer cells, like normal cells, you know, have a number of mechanisms in which to repair damaged DNA, which is the genetic material that all cells basically are programmed from. So one of the mechanisms used by cells to repair damaged DNA is a certain class of proteins called PARPs. It's felt that by inhibiting these PARPs or preventing this repair, the cancer will be further deactivated. So there are quite a few clinical trials now available, specifically looking at antibodies and novel agents that inhibit PARP and these show tremendous promise. So I would say that it's very, very important to consider the possibility of a clinical trial with a PARP inhibitor for your sister. The other class of agents that have been very, very promising, looking at specifically treating patients with triple-negative breast cancer, are called platinols or cisplatinol. These are chemotherapy agents that have been proved to be extremely effective in treating advanced ovarian cancer, and now there's evidence to suggest that these medications also may be very effective to treat patients with triple-negative breast cancer. The other thing that's important in any patient with bone metastases is that there are specific medications called bisphosphonates, which can be given that will help to stabilize the bone, keep the bone strong, and prevent illness related to the bone metastases. So I would say a clinical trial would be extremely important. The way to access these trials, the easiest way would be just to go on to the National Cancer Institute website, look at PARP inhibitors breast cancer, and you'll see there are a number of trials listed specifically that would relate to your sister.
Thank you for that detailed answer, and also it sounds quite encouraging. So our next question comes from Sherry, and she asks, I was just diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. It has already metastasized to the liver. Does the original tumor need to be removed? It was 1.3 centimeters, and it has gotten smaller since I started neoadjuvant chemotherapy.
Well, Sherry, that's a really good question, and there actually are clinical trials in development to answer that, whether or not with patients who have stage 4 breast cancer or sinus of disease outside the breast, if there's any benefit to doing primary surgery on the breast. Now, hopefully, it sounds like things are progressing well for you, and one of the scenarios that often will come up is that patients with disease elsewhere, such as in your case in the liver, if the disease in the liver completely disappears with chemotherapy and there is any sign of any residual cancer in the breast, then I think it would make sense to consider primary surgery on the breast. If the disease in the liver stabilizes but doesn't completely regress and the disease in the breast is not progressive, then I think continuing to observe the breast is fine. It turns out if there's a small tumor in the breast, this can be used actually to monitor the response to systemic therapy, because often as the tumor in the breast shrinks, we know the disease distantly also shrinks. So each situation is individual. The only time we strongly recommend that surgery be done on the breast is if someone has very advanced disease in the breast and they're having symptoms from a breast tumor. In that case, it makes sense just from a symptom point of view to do surgery on the breast to remove the disease. But if things are shrinking well with systemic chemotherapy, then at this point it probably would be premature to consider any surgery on the breast.
Okay, thank you very much. The next question actually came through Twitter. This person asks, my fiance's mother has stage 3B breast cancer, and I was wondering if it's ever too late for a mastectomy. Is prophylactic mastectomy effective and recommended? And what are the possible drawbacks of preventive mastectomy? And also, how will this affect my daughter's chance of developing breast cancer?
All right, well, that's a good question. There are a few questions in there. They're all excellent. Let's cover the last question first. Whether or not having a family member with breast cancer, will this affect the risk of the daughter developing breast cancer? So certainly a family history does somewhat increase risk for other women in the family developing breast cancer. We think that one of the most powerful strategies, though, to further strategize how high that risk is to have the family member who's been diagnosed with breast cancer to consider undergoing genetic counseling and being tested for what we call a BRCA gene mutation. If it turns out that the affected family member is carrying a BRCA gene mutation, then it really explains why she developed breast cancer. And then for the other women in the family to be tested, certainly daughters, nieces, sisters, if they do not carry that same gene, then they actually are not at increased risk of developing breast cancer at all. So meeting with a genetic counselor and discussing genetic testing would greatly help with the decision about how high the daughter's chance of developing breast cancer may or may not be. Now, stage 3 breast cancer is what we would call locally advanced. It's not stage 4, and there's a big difference here. Stage 4 is metastatic beyond the breast and lymph nodes. Stage 4 cancer in general is treatable, but not curable in the traditional sense where treatment can stop and things will be okay. So stage 4 cancer really requires chronic therapy. So it could be chemotherapy, it could be hormone blocking medication. Sometimes treatment holidays can occur for a period of time if the disease is not active, but it's very likely that these patients will require some treatment for the rest of their life. You know, the key has been to devise better and safer and non-toxic therapies so patients can take them more chronically. So it would be analogous to other people with chronic diseases like diabetics or people with severe high blood pressure or heart disease. They don't get cured of their diabetes, high blood pressure, or heart disease typically. They need to be on some kind of medical management chronically. So patients with stage 4 breast cancer fall into that category. With patients with stage 3B breast cancer, part of the treatment for that might be a mastectomy. So if the patient is free of disease elsewhere and the only site of disease is the breast, it would be very reasonable to consider mastectomy as part of the management. Now, my assumption is in the question about preventative mastectomy or prophylactic mastectomy, that would, in someone with cancer in one breast, that question is really relating to what we call a contralateral risk-reducing or prophylactic mastectomy. And this is a very, very individual discussion. I think that there are many women who are faced with the need to have mastectomy having presented with advanced disease who very much prefer to proceed with a risk-reducing mastectomy in the other breast for a number of reasons. Number one, they're very fearful about a new diagnosis of breast cancer in the other breast. Number two, the stress of ongoing screening with mammography, sonography, and MRI may be too great. And number three, the fact that most patients who have mastectomies will have reconstruction done immediately, sometimes from the cosmetic plastic surgery point of view, having a bilateral mastectomy actually allows the plastic surgeon to do a better job in matching the two breasts so that symmetry is achieved. So it's a very personal decision. Generally speaking, if there's not a strong indication for prophylactic risk-reducing mastectomy, the other one would be if a patient had a breast cancer gene that had been identified, I would generally counsel patients to wait if they're in the midst of their breast cancer treatment, because we want to really just take care of the cancer at the time of the initial diagnosis. And the idea of preventing a new breast cancer from developing on the other side in someone who is presented with more advanced disease like stage 3B is probably not the point. You know, her likelihood of getting ill and developing a life-limiting contralateral or opposite breast cancer is so small compared to dealing with the breast cancer that's already occurred that it may be most prudent for patients with more advanced disease to just focus on treating, you know, the cancer that's developed. And then down the road, if they decide to have a risk-reducing mastectomy, it certainly is a reasonable consideration.
Great. Thank you very much. So to our listeners, I would like for you to remember that you can ask Dr. Feldman questions live by calling in to 347-539-5189. Again, if you'd like to call in live to ask questions, please dial 347-539-5189. And again, you can also ask a question on Twitter by mentioning the handle at Columbia Surgery. So moving on to our next question, this again comes through Facebook, and the person asks, I was just recently diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. In addition to the treatment plan that my doctor is setting out for me, are there any alternative treatments that can help extend my life?
Well, again, I'm sorry to hear that you've been diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. Clearly, this is a huge challenge for you. It sounds like you have a good treatment team in place in terms of traditional care, which is, of course, very, very important. You know, it's less certain in terms of which alternative treatments are helpful. I think we do have certainly thoughts about areas that are worth focusing on. Probably the number one area would be nutrition. There's a lot of controversy about what is the best diet and what is the most healthiest lifestyle. I think there are good educational materials which can help to address this. It doesn't necessarily have to be a radical change in your diet, but I think whatever you can do to optimize your health and wellness, including, you know, stress, regular exercise, best healthy diet, meeting with a nutritionist to see if you have any true deficiencies in your diet. The role of supplements is extremely controversial. Some of them can be confounding with traditional therapy, so it is very important that you run this by your medical oncologist. There are lots of organizations specifically geared towards helping patients who are newly diagnosed with breast cancer to begin to look at health, nutrition, and wellness. And this, of course, can include other areas of mind-body approach, including Reiki, meditation, yoga. So it's worth going online. I don't want to particularly endorse one program versus another because there are a lot of excellent programs out there. There is one organization here in New York that I've been active with called You Can Thrive, that I'm on their board. And I believe they do offer this kind of assistance in really doing a nutritional assessment, looking at lifestyle, and looking at safe alternative complementary modalities which can be helpful. So it's a real journey, I think, to try to explore and to pick and choose those areas that may be helpful. I think they're different for different people. People have sometimes asked me, if I had cancer, what diet would I think would be the best? And I do think there's a lot of evidence to, for example, looking at things like macrobiotic diets. But I know for me, I enjoy food so much that if I was on a macrobiotic diet and if I stuck to it very, very religiously, I would be so stressed out and unhappy and deprived by not having some food that I like that the stress of that might counteract the effects of being on so-called healthier diet. So I think you need to pick things that resonate with your belief system that you think that you can accept, that you can perhaps even enjoy doing, that can assist, I think, in improving the quality of your life and perhaps help to extend your life.
Great. Thank you very much. Our next question, and we can probably only take one more after this one, is from Christopher. My sister was just diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. A little bit about her situation, though. She's 42 years old, triple negative, and her doctor suggested to her to have 12 weeks of hormone therapy, removal of the breast, chemotherapy, radiation, and breast reconstruction. I'm afraid she is going to experience a lot of pain, and I'm now unsure how I can be there for her. Can you provide me with insights as to what we can expect so I can better help her through this?
Right. Well, that's a great question, Christopher, and great for you to want to be there to help your sister through. One thing that was a little confusing to me, and maybe a terminology I think for lay people sometimes can be very confusing. So since she has a triple negative breast cancer, hormonal therapy would normally not be recommended. So it may be the 12 weeks of chemotherapy, then the surgery, and then the radiation and reconstruction. So that's just one point of information that you might want to check on, because generally hormonal therapy would not be part, you know, of treatment for triple negative breast cancer, because by being triple negative, it means that it's not estrogen receptor positive.
Right.
So I think that most important thing for your sister and for you is, number one, to make sure that you really understand this, that she's medically correct information, and that the treatment plan, you know, does make sense. It has to be well coordinated through the different disciplines. I mean, you're basically already mentioning four different doctors at least who are going to be involved in her care. There's going to be a breast surgical oncologist, there's going to be a medical oncologist, there's going to be a radiation oncologist, and there's going to be a plastic reconstructive surgeon. So I think the timing and the orchestration between those physicians is extremely important, and sometimes the role for a family member can be just to help with some of the navigation, because there's an awful lot that has to be just worked out logistically to make sure that this happens in a relatively non-stressful fashion. The good news is that a lot of her treatment will be done as an outpatient, short of her surgery, so that she will not have to spend a lot of time in the hospital. And I think, you know, as your question alludes to, just kind of being there for her as her brother and just being there to listen and help support her as she goes through the experience, I think is extremely helpful. I think finding out the things that she wants and that she needs and how you can help advocate for her will be extremely important. So great question, and best of luck with this.
Okay, thank you very much. A very detailed answer. We're going to go down to question 10 that came in from Twitter. And the person asks, I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer in February of 2011. I will be undergoing radiation treatment for 6 weeks. Will this really shrink the size of the tumor? What side effects can I expect, and how long do I have to wait before chemotherapy starts?
Right, so it's a little difficult to answer this just because of the timeline. So I'm assuming that it's been about a year and a half ago that you were initially diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, and that you've already had some chemotherapy, and now we're at the point where you require radiation because there's still some cancer left in the breast. So radiation treatment for treating the breast primary breast tumor doesn't necessarily shrink the tumor, but often what it will do is help control the extent of the tumor and prevent it from enlarging. So this is more of what we call local control. And this is a situation where sometimes we think that surgery may not be the best approach or maybe a very complicated surgery, so that radiation can be used as an alternative. The side effects from radiation for primary therapy of a breast tumor are mainly local in terms of some changes to the skin, some burning of the skin, and some fatigue. Now, typically, chemotherapy would start a few weeks after the radiation is completed, but there are a number of new approaches and new chemotherapy agents which can be used in combination with radiation. So this chemo-radiation simultaneously approach has been shown for certain subtypes of breast cancer to actually improve the effectiveness of the radiation. They're what we call sensitizers, radiation sensitizers, and depending on your type of breast cancer, you may be a candidate for that.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to close our program right now, and Dr. Feldman, we really appreciate your time. As a special surprise, we have another guest with us today, and I'd like to introduce Christine Rain, one of our event planners here at New York Presbyterian Columbia University Medical Center. She's here today to discuss one of our upcoming events. Christine, can you join us now?
Yes, hello. It's great to be here, Deborah. I'm very excited to announce that we're once again hosting our annual Community Breast Cancer Awareness event. It's entitled Bridging the Gap, Enhancing Breast Cancer Prevention, Screening, and Wellness. The program this year is being held on Saturday, November 17th from 8:30 to 2:30 at Club 101, which is located in New York City. We have a really excellent program put together, and it's the focus of the program this year is survivorship. Those attending can expect to hear lectures on topics such as complementary and alternative medicine, sexual health, survivorship studies, nutrition, wellness, holistic care, lymphedema, and genetics. We're going to have a guest speaker who's going to share her personal story, and that's always very inspirational. And our faculty really carved out a large portion of the program to focus on Q&A. Individual questions will be answered. It's a program where the faculty is extremely approachable, and basically the way it's set up, there is opportunity, to ask questions in a private setting as well. We will have breakfast and lunch served. We're going to have a lot of vendors participating that give plenty of useful information, literature, giveaways. We do give away gift bags. And it's really just a wonderful free program where people can get a lot of information. Friends and family are welcome. So we really encourage everybody to help us spread the word and come along. I can tell you that if you want to visit our website, there is a lot of information posted, and this is going to be updated regularly leading up to the program. That website is www.columbiasurgery.org, and if you just click on events, you will see the banner for Bridging the Gap, and that'll take you right to the landing page. So please come.
Well, thank you very much. And Christine, I understand that you actually have a question.
I do have a question. Dr. Feldman, one of the questions that I'm getting from a lot of women that are interested in coming to the program and that have been affected is, one of the things that makes this program specific and different from a lot of the other breast cancer awareness programs that are out there is that it really focuses on women of color, Spanish women, African American women. And if you could talk a little bit about the program and how we are trying to bridge this gap and what some of these ethnic women are facing as far as being a higher risk group and some of the barriers that they have to face, not only socially, but also if there's any genetic component.
A great question, and it's a really, really important question. We do look at it two ways. Number one, you know, when we look at, lots of studies have been done comparing stage of diagnosis of women of color compared to other women. Consistently, these women are diagnosed at more advanced stage disease. We think that there are twofold reasons for that. One certainly is education, access to screening. The interval screenings that occur may be less frequent in women of color. The age of diagnosis can often be significantly younger, and I think there is this misconception that sometimes screening doesn't really need to start until women are older, certainly over 50. Paradox is that particularly in African American women, we do find many women diagnosed at a very, very young age. The biology of the disease clearly is different in different ethnic subgroups. So you really can, if you look globally, there are certainly in African American women, the incidence of what we call triple negative breast cancer that we've been talking about earlier today is significantly higher. And just estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, which tends to be more favorable and easier to treat, lower in African American women. So presumably this is a fundamental genetic difference in the not only the nature of the breast cancer itself, but there may be some fundamental genetic differences in immunology and immunity to disease that are different across different groups. I think that this is a fertile area of investigation. The good news is that we can really dig into the genetics of cancer now, and you know, there's fertile research looking at the genomic variations in different subtypes of breast cancer, comparing women of color to other groups. And it's beginning to bear fruit. And I think relatively soon there will be quite more targeted therapies and more targets identified, which will begin to help bridge this gap so that the outcomes for women of color will not be as negative as they are now relative to other women. So enormous research and enormous potential for the future to begin to characterize. As we talked earlier, breast cancer is not one disease. There are different types of breast cancer. And then, of course, people are not the same. And women of color versus women, Caucasian women, have very different biologies. And beginning to understand the interplay between the tumor biology and the host immunology is going to have, I think, tremendous advances for this field.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Feldman. And Christine, thank you also for telling us about Bridging the Gap, Enhancing Breast Cancer Prevention, Screening, and Wellness. Again, everybody, the program is being held on Sunday, November 17th from 8:30 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon at Club 101 in Manhattan, and we hope to see you all there. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to What You Need to Know If You Are Diagnosed with Advanced Stage Breast Cancer. We apologize if you submitted questions to us that we were not able to answer on this show. As we mentioned earlier, we will answer your questions via email. If you'd like more information on the Columbia Clinical Breast Cancer Program at New York Presbyterian Columbia, our website is www.breastmd.org. Again, breastmd.org. And to contact Dr. Feldman's office directly by phone, please call 212-305-9676. Once again, 212-305-9676. Thank you and have a healthy day. Bye.